All right, hello everybody. My name is Michael McKenzie. I'm an alcoholic, and I am the host for the 115 meeting on BBA Fonts History. And please join me in a moment of silence, followed by the third step prayer. I like the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thy will. Lead me in the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, and victory over them, may bear witness to those that would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Okay, anonymity statement. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Thus, we respectfully ask that AA speakers and AA members not be photographed, videotaped, or identified by a full name on audio tapes or in any published or broadcast reports of our meetings, including those reports on the internet or other new media technologies. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our efforts to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. Please note that the conference is being recorded and try to be mindful of this when you have the opportunity to share. Thank you. As a reminder, this is a family-centered conference. We ask that you refrain from using profanity while sharing. We are aware that people have been trolling all over Zoom rooms and wish to assure you all that we are being as vigilant as possible to try to keep the unity of these meetings intact and disturbance free. Hopefully, Lynn, are you handy? I've got you. You should be able to unmute yourself if you're
I'm here.
Hey, okay, and please help me in welcoming our first speaker, Lynn, who's going to speak for 10 to 15 minutes. Great friend of mine. Thank you, Lynn. It's great to see you.
Great to see you, Michael, and thank you, everybody who's put this on, David, Suzanne, just everybody, Leanne. It's just been so beautiful so far, and the amount of people on the line is just, it just warms my heart. My name is Lynn, and I'm an addict, and for those that don't know me, before Dan passed away, Dan Sherman, who wrote the Big Book Awakening workbook, he asked me to keep his workbook going and get it out and just continue to carry that message and to help get the workbook in to as many people as possible. And that's what I've been doing for the last 4 years. It's been almost 4 years or just over 4 years since Dan passed away. And it's been an honor and a privilege. And I've met a lot of you on the line, either by email, inquiries about the workbook, and people that I just know from my time spending with Dan and my own recovery process. So, David is going to really give the history because he's been around a lot longer than I have. I just celebrated 12 years of sobriety, and he's got a lot more of the history. So I was just going to give you a little brief history of how I came to BBA and then just give you some stats and information on Big Book Awakening. Some of you might not know about Big Book Awakening, and you know, I know that this conference has been billed as a BBA thought, so Fellowship of the Spirit. So not everybody uses this guidebook in going through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So for me, 12 years ago, almost to the day, to the week, I wound up on a beach in Venice, California, in a major heat wave after a three-day run, and literally half my face got completely burnt to a crisp. And that's when I had just said, okay, you know, enough's enough. I had been in program a couple of months and, you know, heard what it was like, but I wasn't hearing anything. It could have been spoken, but I just wasn't hearing it. I went to treatment. I learned about the physical nature of the disease, what Leanne and Lawrence was talking about. I then loitered around Cocaine Anonymous and a little bit of AA for 8 months, just doing the fellowship part of the triangle, and was becoming more and more restless, irritable, and discontent. And at one of the beach meetings on Venice Beach, before Michael was secretary there, a woman who had gone through Big Book Awakening had this message of depth and weight that just spoke to my heart. And I knew that I needed to talk to her, because intuitively, I knew it was just a matter of time that I was going to use, because meetings wasn't enough for me. And she outlined how she takes women through the steps. And I started on this beautiful process with her, had a spiritual awakening, and started taking women through the steps. During that time, I was also hanging out with Kimberly and Dan. There was a Thursday night meeting that Roy was a part of, and I'm sure is still a part of. Hello, Roy, out there. It was so good to hear you. And I think it was called Full Contact AA. It wasn't Big Book Awakening, but it was pure Big Book. And it was crossfire like you've never heard before, and it was fun. It was a little tedious sometimes, but most of the time it was fun. And I met a lot of people that are on the line now. And then after that, I just hung around Dan and some of the Fellowship of the Spirit people. I went to a 2014 conference, hung out with John D, and, you know, just really in Tyler, and had just a beautiful time. And, you know, unfortunately, started to watch Dan deteriorate and helped him through Big Book Awakening when he was in Ensenada fighting for his life. And ultimately he passed. And I've been busy ever since with Big Book Awakening. You know, and for those who aren't familiar with Big Book Awakening, and for those Fellowship of the Spirit people that don't use Big Book Awakening, it's interesting that, you know, Dan didn't have Big Book Awakening meetings. He went to Fellowship of the Spirit meetings, and his process, when he took people individually or through workshops, he took people through the process through Big Book Awakening workbook, because that's how he was taken through the steps. But there are so many people that I respect in AA and other programs that organically turn statements into questions through the Big Book, which I'm sure you'll hear in the history of how that got started with the Golden Slippers group, and David will talk about that. But I respect so much the people within Fellowship of the Spirit, because they know that this is a life and death errand. And the message through the Big Book, the Big Book, whether it's using the guidebook, Big Book Awakening, or going through it, you know, line by line and considering what the book has to say to have a personal experience, it is sufficient to recreate your life. And that's what happened to me at 48 years old. I wanted to die when I came in, and now I more than want to live. And the bright spot of my days are working with other addicts and alcoholics. And I'm just so grateful. So let me just tell you real quick some statistics that I thought were interesting. So Big Book Awakening continues to sell and donate a combination of approximately 8,000 books per year. That's wholesale, retail, Amazon, all the books come through me. Big Book Awakening Spanish was introduced in, I believe it was November 2017, if my records are correct. And Carlos is going to speak on how that came about. And he has worked so hard with Dan personally, and then a little bit with me, to get that book going. There's been several requests to have Big Book Awakening translated in other languages, French, Hebrew, German, Polish, some of which people are on the line. And I really am working behind the scenes to work something out in that way. And I will be contacting a couple of you that have emailed me in the last couple of months on the progress on that. So when I first started sending out books, we got some orders from jails and institutions, and I would send the books, and either their parents or family members would pay for the books, and they would be sent back. It turns out that I wasn't an authorized vendor. They needed like an Amazon.com or something. So since then, there's three big facilities, two in Texas and one in Maine, that actually pay for and bring in the books for the inmates. And that's just been in the last year and a half. And that's some real progress there. They're really, besides treatment centers, the institutions are really seeing a lot of recovery. And there's volunteers that come into the jails and run workshops there. Also, I wanted to just say, I know for you international people, shipping is astronomical, and I'm so sorry about that. It just is what it is. For those of you who don't know, the UK, there is a recovery online website. It's called recovery12.co.uk. And you can order books through that website and save a lot of money on shipping. When I see the UK orders come in, I actually email and ask people if they want a refund and want to, you know, order there, because it's much less expensive and you get the books faster. And then for Australia, the Sydney AA Central Office in New South Wales sells the books. So you can get them there. If anybody internationally knows of any online recovery groups that might want to have Big Book Awakening and sell them, please have them contact me at bigbookawakening.com. I would love to be able to get these books out internationally at a much more reasonable cost. Anyway, that's really all I have to say. I just wanted to, you know, thank everybody for putting this on, and just how much that Big Book Awakening has given me a new life, and that recovery is so worth it. And I just really appreciate and thank all the people before me and all the Big Book Awakening San Diego people and everyone who carries this message and helps with the Big Book Facebook page, Big Book Awakening Facebook page. I'm just so grateful. So with that, I will turn it to David.
Thank you, Lynn. Dave, I'm going to bring up a slideshow that we're going to play while Dave is talking.
Oh, okay.
And so you can go ahead and start talking. I'll bring that up. Hopefully it'll just
come. All right. Hi, my name is David, and I'm alcoholic, cocaine addict. You know, it's funny. Last couple of weeks, I've been compiling this, and there was some shifts and some changes, and a lot of stuff had changed over the years. So I kind of I had to write some notes, because it was just too overwhelming. So so here we go. This is the account of history of BBA, or Big Book Awakenings, which came from, actually it came from the Fellowship of the Spirit convention that's been going on for, I think they're on number 28. Hopefully it'll happen in late July in Denver, Colorado. So actually I traced back the lineage, and actually everybody comes from either Bob Wilson or Dr. Bob, right? So I mean, this is not like earth-shattering stuff. So I traced the lineage back to Dr. Bob. So in 1909, in Worcester, Massachusetts, at Clark University, was like a celebration or a collaboration of the greatest scholastic minds in the United States. So they had a little soiree, and one of the attendees was Sigmund Freud. Now, at that time, Sigmund Freud had an attaché or a friend that was carrying around his notebooks and briefcases, and that guy was Dr. Carl Jung from Germany. So while the conference was going on, Carl was outside, and he was talking to a guy by the name of William James. William James wrote the book, Varieties of Religious Experiences. So Carl was very intrigued by what James was saying and listened intently while he talked about people who experienced complete psychic change that had completely transformed their lives. But like, it was as common as being hit by a bolt of lightning. So, like it said in the book, it happens few, far and few between. Later, Carl Jung broke away from Freud. Freud was kind of grooming him to take over his, he was a psychoanalyst, right? So Jung broke away from Freud, started his own thing, and met a guy named Roland Hazard. Roland came from a very well-to-do family. As a matter of fact, they have a home that's right next to the Santa Barbara Mission, the one that had they used the spire as their they used the tower as their insignia. I went to a retreat in there, and in the courtyard, there's a sundial that was handmade by Roland sitting out in their yard. So that's kind of, we had a retreat house in Santa Barbara that burned down in the 90s. Roland was a devout member of the Oxford group, and sponsored a guy by the name of Ebby Thatcher. And Ebby was the guy that met, he actually had three meetings with Bill. The last one was in the hospital when Bill was actually, they were taking Oxford steps then. So he was with Bill in the bed, and that was the last time, that was when Bill got sober. So, and that table that Ebby sat at with Bill, and Bill pushed the drink across the table, is actually still around, and is it's in Bedford, New York. A friend of mine went there and saw it. So on May 11th, 1935, Bill called Walter Tongues from the Mayflower Hotel, who referred him to Henrietta Seiberling. Now, Henrietta Seiberling was another Oxford Group member, and she started the alcoholic squad of the Oxford Group. And their very first case was Dr. Bob Smith. So, synchronicity? I don't think so. Nothing happens in God's world by mistake, right? So, then in 1946, a guy by the name of Tom Powers got sober. And Tom was sponsored by Bill Wilson. So Tom, he was like the first kind of quote, I call him, he was like the first hippie, because in the 50s, he established his own vegetarian community and had a movement, and his movement or was called All Addicts Anonymous. He had his own program, and it was called AAA. So, but back in 1947, he sponsored a guy by the name of Paul Martin. And for a long time, everybody thought Paul was sponsored by another guy named Paul, but that's not so. I talked to Gary Brown, and he said his sponsor was Tom Powers. So And Paul Martin, actually, he started a group in Chicago called the LaGrange Group. And I have an ex-sponsee that is going to that group currently. So it's one of the oldest AA meetings in the world, or in the United States. So we're going to jump really far ahead now. And in 1975, at the World Convention was held in Denver, Colorado. There was a group of 14 men and women that went to the convention, and they were, I guess there might've been more than 14 of them, but they went to this convention, and they heard this guy named Mac Cheaters talk about the way him and his group, the Golden Slippers, and they were from Winnipeg, Canada. That meeting is still going on also, and how they went through the big book. And they would go through the big book, and whatever the big book said, they would do. So when it said ask, that means pray, they would pray. When it said to write inventory, they would write inventory. So they went back to their friend's Jay Levy's basement and started going through the book and kind of calling Mac once in a while to ask him for help and guiding him through the steps. So they went through the book themselves. In that group, there was this guy named Eddie Durkin. And Eddie Durkin had a false limb that he would sometimes lose, and they would have to go outside and try to find it for him. Well, he relapsed and got drunk in his car in the dead of a Denver winter and froze to death. But the rest of the people in that group, in the Denver Young People's group, stayed sober pretty much permanently. So that was a great feat back then. Some of the members in the Denver Young People's group was Gary Brown, Don Pritz, Bob Olson, and Lynn Byron. And then there was this another guy that was there, and he was an ex-con, and his name was Don Pritz. So at one point, after they went through that workshop, Gary Brown started sponsoring Don Pritz. And then Gary Brown in 77 moved back east to Indiana. And that's when he was sponsored by Paul Martin. So that's kind of like the way, that's kind of the progression there. So Mickey Musset and Joe Hawk, they came around to the same group, the Denver Young People's Group, in the early 80s. And in 1982, Joe Hawk went through the work with Don Pritz. And then he went through the work with Frank McKibben. Don Coyas, who's a Native American, who started he formed the White Bison and the Wellbriety Movement. He's still sober today and still doing work with the Native Americans in the United States. Gary Brown and Mark Houston. Joe was great at compiling information and experiences and kind of like making it his own, you know what I mean? So Don was the one that was turning the statements into questions, and Joe really picked up on that. So when Joe moved to California, in 1986, Joe moved to California, and he started a workshop. He got an apartment. Actually, he came out here on a men's trip, and by a simple twist of fate, was able to find a rent-controlled apartment right on the beach in Santa Monica. And so he moved into that apartment and gave this workshop in like the study room. And there was 14 people in that workshop. And some of those people were Kurt Zimmerman, Robin, Kevin Kay, Sandy Kay, Jeff W, and a guy by the name of G.W. Taylor. So those were some of the guys that were in that first workshop. And in 1987, Joe did a workshop at the Sally. We call it the Sally. It was a Salvation Army. It was a local Salvation Army was in Santa Monica. And those tapes from that talk that he gave were like, I mean, they're still sought after today. Those tapes that Joe did at the Salvation Army was recording. In 1989, Dan got sober. And he had another sponsor at the time, and that sponsor told him to find a 11-step meeting if he could. So Dan looked in the directory, and he found a Tuesday night meeting, steps 10, 11, and 12 at 7:30 on 2nd and Hill Street. Now, Dan lived on 10th and Broadway, so, I mean, he could almost walk there. It was so close. He went there, and a strange thing happened. He stumbled upon Joe's group, and he heard something that he never heard before. He heard a message of depth and weight. And so that hooked him. And so that meaning is still... Actually, I had a commitment to that meeting for 22 years, but that meeting's still going on. We have a 5-minute meditation in the beginning and a 5-minute meditation at the end. So, well, what happened was, and crosstalk was allowed. And so Joe would come out and invite all these great speakers from around town to come in, come to the meeting and share. And then, they would like interrogate the guy after his pitch was over. And so a lot of times, you know, the second meditation, the speakers would slip out so they wouldn't get interrogated at the end of the meeting by the other members. So that was kind of funny. And it got bloody. It got heated at times. I met Dan in 1990. I was still living in a rehab, and I was doing my 90 meetings in 90 days because that's what I had heard to do. But you know, a little different twist because I had 23 months of sobriety while I was doing it. So yeah, this is like the thickest source known to man is right here. So in 1990, I got out of the rehab, and I remember I used to go to meetings, and I would see Dan. I met him when I was doing the 99, and we used to go to this Cocaine Anonymous was like the biggest thing back then, and it was kind of new, and I met Mike there too. So I went to this meeting, this Brotman meeting, and it was where all the pretty people went, and everybody got dressed up, and it was a good thing, you know. And Dan pulled up in his car. He had a Grand National then, and he pulled up in his car, and he rolled down the window, and I went over to him, and I asked him, you know, how was he doing and what's that? And he said, he says, I got a new sponsor. I'm doing the work. And by then, I had already been through the work from another guy. I had found my first sponsor threw me right into service work, doing as an area chairman for Cocaine Anonymous Hospitals Institution. So I was really inundated with a lot of commitments for many years. I did that, and I was at a meeting in. I went to a meeting in Santa Monica. I was in Los Angeles on Santa Monica Boulevard. There used to be this late night Cocaine Anonymous. That in those days had a lot of late night meetings, you know, like 9:30, 10:30, 11:30. This one was at 11:30 at night on a Friday, I think, or Saturday. And so the guy would let us go in his restaurant after he was closed. So I went to that meeting, and you know, I was still kind of like all fired on, you know, self-help and behavior modification. I mean, I had that stuff so much, I could have probably opened up my own rehab, you know? So I went in that meeting, and it was a crosstalk meeting, and I got up and I spewed my shit, I mean, stuff. And then some guy got up and he said, you're a dry drunk and you're going to drink. And I said, what the? I said, man, you know what? We're going to step outside and we're going to see who's drinking what, you know? And so we're going to have some words. And so we went outside and my hand went from this to this because I knew what he was telling me was true. And I didn't realize that half that room was being sponsored either by GW or this guy Alton who had been to that workshop at the end that Joe started back in the back at his place. So this guy introduced me to my first step guide, and this guy was a Korean guy, and I don't know if you guys know this, but Japanese aren't supposed to associate with Koreans. You know what I mean? It's like a taboo or whatever. It's actually just prejudice. I think we're the most prejudiced people on the planet. And so I remember my mom came home one day because we tried working at his place, but you know, his mom was there and it was a small apartment. His sister lived there and was very chaotic and they were running around. So I said, well, why don't we go to my house? Because my parents are always at work. There's nobody ever home. And I was still living in Santa Monica. So he came over and my mom came home one day and she says, get that guy out of here. And I said, Mom, he's here to help. You know, he's taking the work. And I remember when he opened up the book and, you know, back then the circle and triangle was still in the book. So I had my third edition. And back in those days, what you would do is you would have to go out and get those tapes from the Sally and you would listen to the tapes. And he would give you a piece of paper and you would write the piece of paper down in your book and put a cue. And then you'd have to figure out what the question was and then answer the question. So so that's kind of how I went through the first time. And when we got to 6 and 7, you know, right, my friend Jeff, my first sponsor, Jeff Cole, he had, you know, he got in a car and he got a job and then he got a car. And then he got the apartment, and then he got a girlfriend, and then he got loaded. And that was like the typical scene happening back in those days, Cocaine Anonymous. It was just like, it was very common. So I kind of was flopping around in the room, right, dry. And I went to that Brotman meeting, and I saw Dan. And it was kind of just like the Ebby and Eddie and Bill thing, right? I just knew when I walked up to the window and looked at him, I said, something's different. You know, I don't know what it is. I can't really, you know what I mean? It was like, that was maybe the first time I had actually gotten in touch with like, you know, the vital sixth sense. But I knew something was different. So I asked him what was going on. He told me, well, you know, I got a new sponsor. I got a home group. And he says, I'm working with this guy named Joe and I'm going to start a workshop at my house. And I went, I'll go. I'm there, man. I'll go. And so that's what happened. And in 1991, Dan had that workshop at his house. Then he was living downstairs in the front apartment. So we would come there every week, and there was about 14 of us. And you know, the typical scenario, by the time we got to inventory, there was like 5 or 6 guys left. But and he was kind of spoon-feeding us the stuff that he had gotten from Joe. So by then he had, you know, had kind of cleaned up the papers a little bit, but he still was kind of chaotic. And there was another guy in there by the name of Richard. I used to know Richard. Richard was a security guard, and he lived over on Fairfax near Pico. So a lot of times I would go over there and pick him up and take him to the book study with me. And, you know, Richard was a security guard, and you know, I'm a whatever. I just work in a grocery store. You know, that's what my parents did. That's what I do. I, you know, so I didn't have much education, formal education. So you could say we were kind of slow. But the rest of the group, you know, were pretty smart. There were some guys graduated college in that group. And, you know, they didn't have no problems with, you know, putting that stuff in their book and reading it. And, you know, like every third word, I'd have to stop and look it up in the dictionary. You know what I mean? Same with Richard, you know, we just didn't understand. So, but when Dan kind of went through those papers and went through his notes on the computer, and started putting the statements and turning the statements into question and actually putting it down in the book and being very precise about it, and everybody kind of got on the same page because we were all answering the same questions. So kind of like that group developed like a group dynamic. And so we started moving forward, you know, but I think at first, yeah, we were in the first step for like 4 months. It was a long time, but when Dan finally organized that stuff. And so Dan would stay up till like, you know, 3-4 in the morning trying to compile all this stuff. And he finally had some success and gave us, he got the pieces of paper and he kind of bound, he didn't bind them and he put them all together and he handed them to Joe. And Joe took those down to Mark Houston, and Mark Houston went to this guy, this taper that we use, Rusty Warner, and Rusty made it into like a three-wing binder. And then about a year later, he made those, you know, the ones with the plastic, the little plastic things at the end. Yeah, so that was the first time it actually went into like a, you know, like a book form type of deal. And so, you know, so then during the workshop, you know, Dan told us about the meeting. So I started going to the meeting. That was about 1992. Started going to the meeting. And, you know, when we went to the meeting, if you're in your first step, you would identify as, I'm David and I'm finding out, or I'm David and I'm seeking my truth. Because if you're truly setting aside everything you think you know, then you don't know if you're an alcoholic. You don't know if you're an addict. So, and that's the way it was. And it was very rigid and very exclusive. And man, I just fell into that. I just fell in love with it, man. I just, you know, and just like they would do when they interrogate the speakers, man, I was all over that. You know, I thought that was like the coolest shit in the world, you know? So at that time, Joe and Mark were speaking everywhere, and became really popular. And we had a retreat center in Santa Barbara, and you know, we'd have everybody come out. We'd had Frank come out, and we'd have Don come out, and we had Gary Brown coming out. And in fact, the one of the first times I met Gary, it was I picked him up at the airport. Now, Santa Barbara Airport's really small, but I remember meeting him, and we talked, you know, in the car, and you know, I was really nervous, and you know, I only had a few years of sobriety back then, and so it was different, but I was really taken in by it, man. It was really overwhelming. And I think Dan felt the same way. And some of those pictures that you saw were from that retreat center. So, in 1993, the first Fellowship of the Spirit conference was held in Breckenridge, Colorado. And pretty much the founders of that were Don Pritz, Mickey Musset, Jerry Elkins, a few other people were around back then still. So a host of others were hanging out, and their groups, they had this kind of like a, it was like a clubhouse. It was this three-story Victorian building in downtown Denver on York Street. So that's kind of where they had all their meetings at the time. And at one point, they had a meeting on Thursday night, and you had to be 12-stepped into the meeting by one of the members. So I was out there skiing or something like that, and I think I met Joe, and we went out to dinner, and he 12-stepped me. And the next night, we went to that meeting. And man, I had never had that experience, but I mean, these people had been going through the steps together as a group for like 10, 15 years in a row. I mean, you could just sense how unified they were, and how, you know, there was no fences, there was no guard, they were completely open and, you know, what we call transparent. And I never sensed that from the Tuesday group, but I sensed it here, and it was pretty overwhelming. I think the next year I went to the first Fellowship of the Spirit that I had went to I think Teresa was there, and Sydney was there, a couple other people, and Jaime and Shelley, of course, and Joe and Don, and then I met Jerry Elkins, and we walked up and we opened the front door, and Jerry welcomed me, and he stuck his hand out, I shook his hand, and he goes, "You're doing step four in the step workshop." So that's how they used to pick their people for the panels in the workshop, was on the fly. When you walk up, they walk up to you and say, "Okay, can you do this and this on this step at this time?" And so that's the way it was. So that was kind of the tradition that's maintained that conference for since then. So I told you about the book that Rusty had bound, and finally in 1996, after, you know, a lot of sleepless nights, Dan finally bound it. So it became the book that we have today. So, and, you know, it's a nice, and that's a pretty impressive package, right? I mean, you see stuff on literature tables and, you know, they're kind of like, you know, they're not really professionally done. And so, but Dan's looked really good on the table. So at that point, the lineage was, right, it was Bill Wilson, Tom Powers, Paul Martin, Gary Brown, Don Pritz, Joe Hawk, Dan Sherman, David Shikamatsu. And so that experience at Silver Creek really, really sparked me. And in 2000, we started our own. I think it was 2001, actually, when the first one. We started our own Fellowship of the Spirit West. And it was held at a YMCA camp, Round Meadows in Big Bear. And I remember because when I was a child, I went to that YMCA camp. There was a few of them up there. And I remember because I had this big bag, and I wrapped my clothes around bottles of Ripple. And I took them to that place and got all my friends, you know, got them, like, everybody wasted. So, like, yeah, I was that guy, you know. I was, my parents bought a liquor store when I was 10, and I was a weekend warrior by the time I was 12. So you do the math. By the time I was 32, you know, and it had quit working a long time before that. So anyways, this place was, you know, it had been old, it was older, and it was pretty, pretty run down. And there was like these cubicles, cement cubicles with no roofs. And inside of them were these rusted box springs and mattresses, but no mattresses, just the box springs. And that's what we were supposed to sleep on. And when we came back down the hill, one of the committee members called the health department, and they closed the place. So that's, but I mean, you know, actually, I think one of the pictures shows that conference, our first Fellowship of the Spirit West at Round Meadows in Big Bear. And I mean, it was a great fellowship. Joe was there, and yeah, it was phenomenal. Just the food and the accommodations were terrible. And I had brought in a friend of mine there. I found him at the Royal Palms. Back then we had this place we'd go to, and it was like a tradition. Me and Jaime took over from Joe, and it was labeled the dim sum meeting. What it was the meeting was at 7 o'clock on Sunday, and at 8 o'clock after the meeting was over, he would take the speakers into Chinatown, and they would have dim sum. Dim sum is Chinese dumplings, Chinese steamed dumplings. So me and Jaime kind of took over that tradition, and so we would go and you know, take the speakers to dim sum, come back, and then we would have workshops inside the Royal Palms, which was a 90-day rehab, and you could stay from 90 days to 6 months. And out of that, I met a guy, and I took him through the work, and he was like my first protege, or, you know, he was like my first sponsee that made it all the way through to amends. And I love that man. He later married a really good close friend of mine in dance, and they had a kid. And he had an ex-wife and three other kids by another marriage. And so they moved the kids out to their house in the Palisades, and completely transformed their lives too. So you never know. You never know what's going to happen. By then, Dan got busy. Dan was flying around the world, you know, speaking and pitching the BBA, but what was then was being known as the BBA, but we always call it the Big Book Awakenings, the Awakenings book. And so in the new millennium, Dan was flying around the world, and, you know, I started going to Thailand, and actually I would get onto my laptop over Skype and work with guys here in the United States from Thailand. So that was like the first time I started doing that. I thought that was really cool. And so Dan did a lot of trips to Australia, and it got real, the BBA got really popular in Australia. And in fact, that's why it's at their central office. That's how common it got. And there was a girl there named Jeanette who would fly over every year and go through the steps and fifth step with the women in the at Fellowship of the Spirit in Denver, Colorado. And one of those people was Jenny McKibben, who was Frank McKibben's wife. Then in also around that time, 2003, 2004, a lot of people starting to pass away. Frank McKibben passed away, and then I think Jenny passed away in 2005, and then Joe, and then Don, and it was Don, and then Joe, and then so yeah, we went through some hard times back then. So back then they started referring to it as the BBA book. But out of those dark days, working with another alcoholic would save the day for me and Dan. I mean, it was like our common deal. And this guy, John, I did the same thing that Dan did with me. You know, I took him under my wing. We went skiing, we went dirt bike riding, and, you know, and we went to dinner after the meetings. And Dan was not really, I call him my sponsor, but I mean, he was like the older brother that I never had, you know. And I grew up here in Alcoholics Anonymous doing the work out of the Big Book and turning the statements in question. I matured here. I was that same kid when I got here at 32 years old and 34 when I started this work, as that same kid that was stealing smuggling those Ripple bottles into YMCA camps. I was that same kid, just in a much fatter, bigger body, but mentally I was the same guy. So, you know, it wasn't like, you know, you hear stuff about, you know, you get something, right, recovery is you get something back. I never got back. I never knew what soundness of mind was, because unless I was drunk, that was the only time I experienced that. So Yeah, booze did for me what I could not do for myself. And today, another person that Dan was worked was a girl named Tyler, and she was a bright spot in his life. And Tyler, you know, took this back to her home groups and started her own meeting. And so what was once a flimsy reed is now the Everglades of recovery. I mean, if you've never been there, I would recommend you go. If you're ever in the area in San Diego, I mean, it is the most wonderful thing to go to that meeting on Wednesday night. And you're all welcome to come Tuesday night. We have a rotating format. We still have 5 minutes of meditation, and all are welcome, and it's open meeting now. So I hope that sheds some light on the history. I know there was a lot of it was mine. But I love Dan, and I love what he did. And this is the only process I know. I only know how to take people through the Big Book Awakenings. I've done it a couple of different ways, but this is the one that's always stuck. And this is what I pass on to other people. And, you know, we have a wonderful duplicatable process that works. And it's truly amazing to be a part of this. So thank you very so much. You have no idea. Do you have Carlos? Is Carlos around?
Thank you, Dave. I'm going to try to find him. Okay. Thank both of you, Lynn and Carlos. Thank you so much. That was awesome. Is it Carlos Olguin?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to unmute him. All right, Carlos, can you talk? Okay, great. So we have Carlos to talk about BBA in Spanish.
Am I ready?
Yep,
go ahead.
Cool. Right. Hi, my name is Carlos Olguin, and I'm a recovered alcoholic and addict. And thank you for having me here today. I appreciate it very, very much. I'm here. I'm going to be talking a little bit of the process of my process with the program, and also how it came about to do it in Spanish, to do the translation to Spanish, and how that has helped the Spanish community. My recovery date is in 2008, and that happened to me not with my choice, and I wish I would have wanted it to happen, but it didn't, you know, for me to stay in the program. And that I went into a program named Stepping Stone here in San Diego. And at that time, I didn't know what the program or anything meant, you know, what it was asked of me to do I didn't know what to stand. I only knew what I had remembered from my childhood to be an alcoholic through my family and friends, you know, because as growing up, I was a kid that was very upset with my family members bringing the alcohol and the drugs to the house. And I would throw it down the toilet and even the cigarettes, and I would find it in my brothers and family's pants, you know, and it would scare me a lot. But never thinking that in my future, I would come to do that, you know, and I would come to use and be part of that spirituality, you know, that disease. And I went through the stages of being an alcoholic, you know. I went from my school to a different state, and when I was there, I discovered alcohol and cocaine through my friends. You know, I could stay up later, I can work better, I can do all these things that were amazing to me, you know. Yeah, I'm on top of it, you know. I was doing homework for like other people's because I was getting money from it, and I was able to finish all of that in my practice too. I was doing two careers at the same time, and it was part of my life. And I, for a moment, it felt right, you know. Until it didn't, you know, and for that, those stages came by pretty quickly. And my addiction was 13 years where, like, you know, family members, friends, and wanted me to stop, but I just couldn't do it. I ended up
Hey, Carlos, you muted yourself by mistake. There you go.
Okay.
Good.
Got it? Am I there?
Yep, you're good.
Okay, cool. Because so I was introduced to the Big Book Awakening at Stepping Stone through a friend that was there in the program. And she came to the table that I was sitting on, and she brought her book and her workbook. And I would see how she was doing the work and the transcribing and the turning statements into question. And I asked her, like, you know, what's that? And she's like, oh, this is from a workshop that we have up in the meeting room, and we're doing the program. And this is the only thing that helps, you know, when we go through the program. And for an alcoholic and an addict, at that moment, I knew that something was wrong with me, because I couldn't stop, you know, no matter if my sister told me, my brothers, my family, or anything, or my job told me to stop, I couldn't. But inside me, I knew that there was something wrong. And when she said that, you know, this was the way to help people come out of that problem, I kind of wanted to do so. I said, can you think I can come in? I said, yeah. So I did. And Nathan Jones was at that time doing the workshop there at Stepping Stone, and I went in, and I asked just to listen, to do an audit, to see if I liked it or that I wanted to be in it. And I did, you know, when I sat down and I started listening to the other people and related to my life, you know, it was not no more semantics, and it was no more like, you know, things that I needed to do, things that I needed to work on, things that I needed to change. It was something in me that called. It was within that, like, you know, okay, this is what I'm called for to do, you know. So I kept coming back, and I tried to invite everybody, because it was so awesome to me, you know. It was so awesome that I tried to get people to come and go, oh, you guys need to go, this workshop is amazing, you know. It was actually also my first time to be introduced to AA. I went to meetings before, but I never actually wanted to be there. I will go out to the bathroom, I will do this and that, or just there. And I would not go. So after I started doing the program, I started to like the meetings, you know, especially at the Alana Club. And that was put on by Tyler and them. And it was amazing for me to go. I didn't understand that then either, you know, what was expected of me or what I needed to do. All I knew is that I needed to keep moving forward. And I remember my nephew wanting to tell one time one day saying, they were bringing me back from my sister's house to the program. And he said, you know, why do you have to go back? And I asked him, like, well, do you like the uncle that you have? You know, that. That's, oh, I said I wasn't going to do this. You like that uncle that's there for you, you know, that plays with you. And he said, yes. And so I'm sorry. So I said, I have to go back there, you know, because there's this program there that's helping me. You know, I'm sick. I'm really sick, and it's beyond me, you know. I can't control it. So, and he understood. That was the fascinating thing about it. You know, he understood it. He said, okay. And he waited for me the next week to come back. And so that was then. And so I started to do the workshop, and I finished my steps with them. Then I asked Nathan Jones, the same guy that was doing the workshop there, to be my sponsor. And I think the same thing, because, you know, I understood him. He understood my background. He understood what I was going through. And he knew what he was doing. You know, he's gone through the program, but he also sponsored other people. And he also been there for other people, not just be a sponsor, but he'd been there. You know, I had a type of sponsor that I called him at 2 o'clock in the morning, and he will pick up. You know, I will call him every time, and he will be there. He will answer, and he will explain to me, and he will give me that peace and calmness that the program does, you know, or a sponsor does when I can't do it on my own. And that was the great part of it, you know. Also, like, you know, my family was a big part on this to start, because I saw them seeking God. And they also began to change. And I said, you know, why not give this more a different route? You know, like just give myself through it to it. And I did. So eventually I continued doing the work. That was 2008.
You have 5 minutes, Carlos.
Cool. All right, thank you. That was 2008 when I finished the program. It was not until 2000 and I think, if I'm not mistaken, around 14, 15, that I, before that, I started translating the program for a friend that I thought he needed it in Spanish. And I had to stop doing the work because it was so powerful. If it was powerful in English to me, when I did it back in Spanish, it was so much powerful. It was like a string hitting my heart and my mind so directly, because that's what I grew up with. You know, that's what the resentments were. That's where everything was, the root of it. And I stopped and I said, when am I going to finish doing this? And so that's when I talked to Dan and I said, you know, this is what's happening. I have the opportunity to translate for a friend and this is what's going on. And I think it will be helpful for other people. And he was up for it. You know, I had an amazing time with Dan. He sponsored me as I was translating the work and he helped me do it. And I had every question that I had, every single little thing, I would call him back and I would say, you know, I have this question here. I know there's a meaning for this translation, but what's the message behind it, you know? Because the wording in the big book in Spanish, sometimes it doesn't translate the same. So I want to make sure that even the book or the work that we're doing translates that message to it. And he was very helpful in every single way. You know, I would be calling him and it would be like an hour before his meeting. It's like, you know, he will help me inside his car and he will send me things through his computer. He was like so calm, you know, he was like, I don't know where he got that. I wish I could be like that one day because he was just an amazing, like, you know, he would talk to me and I would just calm down and understand. And he would explain to me like why things were what they were, you know, why it was the writing, why the understanding and the message. And I got it, you know, and we went ahead and translated. We did one workshop in Spanish. I did my first workshop, and this is really cool. I stayed there the first day. Nobody showed up, but I stayed there. You know, I committed to those 2 hours, so I stayed there. And 1 hour into the workshop where I was waiting there alone, one person showed up. And that person called two more people for the next meeting, and that's how it went. That was our first workshop in Spanish. At that time, we didn't have the book and printed. It was only like 2 years later that we finished the workshop. We made sure that it was a little bit better for people to understand. And we then came back and did another workshop. And then that happened without the workbook too. And then we did the third workshop. That was already with the workbook in Spanish with Lynn. Actually, she was amazing. She helped us, like she helped me. She read proof the book, even though it's in Spanish. But she's amazing, you know that she just went through it and it's the workbook in Spanish. If you look at it and you put them side to side, they look identical. And just to help that, you know, and now we have the BBA in Spanish is now, we did just finished about 2 months ago in February, I think, before the pandemic, we finished our fourth workshop. That workshop was recorded and it's now on the website, bbaworks.com in Spanish. And there's also there like all the tools that you guys need. It's also in Spanish. Some will be more available by the summer this year. Then once we finish translating them, it will be up there. This work in Spanish has gone all the way to Mexico. I worked with people over the phone in Mexico, in Puerto Rico, in Austria. And I mean, it's limitless, you know, and I am so honored to be here tonight. And to everybody that's listening, you know, and that have, because we Latinos are everywhere, anywhere there's a taco stand, let them know, you know, everybody that's suffering, you know, in the Spanish community, let them know that we have this program and there's people that are willing to work with it, with them. And I'm so honored. Oliver Schwartz and Rodney were the ones that put up the last workshops and helped us you know, get pass the message. And I'm grateful for so many people that come through it. And one of the things that I just want to say that this before I go, when Dan would be seeing all the translation and he would have no problem. And then when it was time to do the main, how do you say, the front page of the workbook, he was expecting still to see BBA, Big Book Awakening, you know. And when I showed him, you know, it's not going to be Big Book Awakening, he was like, wait a minute, what happened to Big Book Awakening? And it's like, no, well, it's in Spanish now, you know, this is not no more, but it's the same thing, you know, we are awakening from this state, you know, that of unmanageability and spiritual malady, restless, irritable, discontent to this new life from which this program has helped me. And it has been a great pleasure for me. You mean, I sat down for countless hours and you have no idea, years, making sure that, you know, that when people understand it, not for me, but that when people will read it, they will understand it and that they will be able to get help just as I was, you know? And for that, I'm grateful for Tyla, for Nathan, for my family, you know, for my friends and everybody that picks up this workbook. And for the people that came before me, you know, Don Prince, Dan Sherman, Prince, Mark Houston, and Bill Wilson, you know, everybody. But most importantly, every single one of you that gets up there today, like the people that are putting up this this program today, that's just the most powerful. I get to hear it as I'm washing my dishes, as I'm cooking dinner or whatever I'm doing. I get to be there, you know, and that is awesome. It just feeds my soul. And I want to thank you all.
All right. Awesome, man. Thank you, guys. Thank you, everybody. That was really, really, really good. Thanks, Lynn. Thank David. Thank Carlos. That was awesome. We went over a little bit there, so that's all the time we have. Once again, thanks, everybody. We're going to have a short break, and we'll be back at 2:30 p.m. for our next panel. I will open a breakout room just for a few minutes. So you guys can share and talk to each other. And we will hopefully, one of the co-hosts will bump over there and help out. And the breakout room will be closed before the next meeting starts. So don't worry about that. If you're in it, it'll close and you'll be back in the main room. BBA FOTS does not close each meeting with a prayer. Instead, we encourage that this whole conference be treated with an attitude of continuous prayer. And we'll then say a prayer together at the close of the conference on Sunday evening. Please help me close this meeting by joining in a moment of silence. Let us share our spiritual experience and strengths with each other so that we can grow together in greater understanding and love. So a moment of silence. All right. Thank you, guys. I'm going to open the breakout room now. Thanks again, Carlos, Dave, and Lynn. That was really awesome.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.